Mentored by some of the best minds in entrepreneurship in the world, then you're listening to the right podcast, Ditch Digger CEO. We're going to be interviewing CEOs and founders who will be telling their amazing rags-to-riches stories. These entrepreneurs who dominate the industries they serve will be sharing the secrets to their success. We'll be talking to millionaires and billionaires, many who started with nothing. You're going to be mentored with golden nuggets of shared experiences from my guests, whose time is worth thousands and even tens of thousands of dollars per hour. I started in the paving business right out of high school, and with no college education, mentorship has been my education of choice. I started over 25 companies in the last 20 years, have generated over $1.5 billion in revenues. My guarantee is this: if you listen to Ditch Digger CEO and you want to be more successful, you will become more successful. The secrets of my success and for many of the world's greatest business leaders will be revealed. Let Ditch Digger CEO mentor you.
Hey, Chris, we are blessed to have an all-star on our show here on Ditch Digger CEO. We've got Rita Case. Rita Case, welcome to Ditch Digger CEO, and thank you for being here today.
It's my pleasure, Chris and Gary. Thank you for having me.
So, Rita, we just know a little bit about your story, but not near enough. So, you know, we just want to hear your story, kind of where this amazing, you know, business, Rick Case Automotive Group, came about. Like the idea, the vision, what you're doing to continually carry that vision forward. We always like to talk about your core values, but a little personal kind of is if, wherever you want to go personally. We love to hear your personal background too, and philanthropic stuff too. So we want you to talk, and you can, and Chris shuts me up once in a while because I talk too much. All right. But we want you to talk about your amazing story, the story of this great company.
Well, it pretty much started out. My dad was the first Honda dealer in the United States back in California. He started with the Honda motorcycles in 59. He was a car mechanic. He had his own little car mechanic shop, just a two-person. My dad fixed the cars. My mom answered the phone. And they worked in the 50s and Porsches and MGs and Austin Healey's and things like that. And Honda came to town in California and said, hey, we've got this little motorcycle we're trying to introduce to the United States. My dad said, I'll take it. Might as well put it out front. Maybe somebody will buy one. And then as the motorcycles through the 50s and the 60s grew to be very popular, the Honda brand grew. In 1968, they decided to bring a car to the United States. They started talking about a car. They went to their motorcycle dealers and said, hey, would you like to buy start a Honda car franchise or sell Honda cars? My dad said, sure, I'm really a car guy. So my dad took the Honda cars, which he was given the first Honda car franchise in the United States. So he's dealing them one.
And wow, that's so cool. What year was that?
That was in 1968. And the first car was delivered in 1969, late 69, like the beginning of 1970. And that's only in California because that's where their main office was in L.A. And so they first chose dealers in California, motorcycle dealers, because that was their only distribution. So my dad took it on, and I was in high school. I took my driver's test at 15 in a Honda car, when the first one that we got. So I was basically like the first person to sell Hondas in the United States. Because back in 1970, in April of 1970, you couldn't give that car away. It was a 600cc motorcycle engine in a tin can with air-cooled engine. And they had a motorcycle that was a 750. So they had a motorcycle that had a bigger engine than this car. This was, of course, before the oil embargo, before really Datsun, which is Nissan now, of course, but Datsun and Toyota really got their feet in. And that all happened at the oil embargo, which was 1974-75. So I was selling Honda cars. Basically, I would drive one to school and my friends would all see them. And I'd say, hey, you can have a brand new car. It's only $1,295. Come on down, you know, see me after school. So that's how, you know, I got in the car business. I was raised in a family business. So I was doing the motorcycles in grade school. I was sweeping the floor, putting away parts. You know, I did every job in the dealership. Then when we got the car franchise, it was a motorcycle car, dual point, because that's all there was. And that's kind of how I got passionate about it. I really never got passionate about the car business or the motorcycle business. What I got passionate about was people. I found out that I'm just really a people person. I've always believed that, you know, the way the corner of your mouth is in the morning is the way the rest of your day is going to be. So if you're so quiet up, you're going to make a difference with everybody around you. They're going to be attracted to you if you're a happy, positive person. You know, I always say my attitude is my altitude. So
absolutely.
So I got into business. So my parents, of course, were still there. And when I went to college, I decided to go to college, first one in my family to go to college. I had an older sister and an older brother and a younger brother. But I was the one who was passionate about people and about the energy that you get from a people business. And the car business, retail in general, is a people business. Whether you have a restaurant or you have a furniture store or you're a paving company, it's about people. So I went off to college, got back. When I got back from college, I told my dad, listen, it's either you or me, Dad. I can't be here with you because I'm tired of being the DB. I called myself the DD, which was the dealer's daughter. So every time I went to a meeting, it was always like, oh, she's only here because her dad's the dealer. She's only here because, you know, he wants to bring her along. Maybe she'll learn something. But the car business is not for women, so it's never going to last for her. So back in college, and I say, Dad, it's you or me. Either you leave, you and Mom leave, and let me take this on by myself, because I'd already worked there. You got to remember, I'd worked there my entire, from 8 years old, 9 years old, I was going there every day after school or in the summers. So I felt qualified and ready. Of course, I had this college education now, so I was really smart. you always feel that way. And so my dad said, okay, I'm giving you two pieces of advice, my dear Rita. He says, your first loss is your best loss, and my checks better always cash. So I took over the business, and the first thing I did was I contacted NADA, and I said, we need to educate these car motorcycle dealers on the car business, and I want you to start a Honda 20 group. So, which is a group of dealers around the country that are in the same market area. They call it a 20 group in national dealers. Are you familiar with that? The Honda 20
group? No.
Okay. Well, no. The National Auto Dealers Association, the NADA, if you're familiar with that, it's the National Organization for Automobile Dealers, just like I'm sure there's a national organization for contractors. And
yeah, they had their event in Vegas a few months ago, right?
That's where I got the Time Dealer of the Year award was in Vegas. So when
I was supposed to go, darn it, I wish I would have gone now.
Yeah, okay, so that's every year they have a national convention. So anyway, they have this group where every manufacturer would get 20 dealers around the country. You could not be in the same market area. You had to be at least 250 miles from the next dealer in the group. So I went to NADA and I said, could you please start a Honda 20 group where you get Honda car dealers together around the country so that we can come up with a plan on how to sell these cars. So that's where I met my husband, Rick. He was a Honda car and motorcycle dealer in Cleveland, Ohio, Akron, Ohio, and I was there in Santa Rosa, California. We met at the first meeting. So that's how I met Rick. And
what year is that? What year is that?
1977. And we got married, and that was after I'd gotten out of college. We got married in 1980. I relocated from California to Akron, Ohio, where his car and motorcycle dealership was. And our partnership was absolutely perfect. I was an operations fixed operations, people person, very much more of the finance arm. And he was a salesman. You know, his motto was, if you sell enough, you'll make a profit in volume. So he was very much a volume-oriented marketing genius. And I was just that great second person that kind of filled in all those other operational holes. So together we ended up growing the business to be one of the largest dealership groups in the United States. Pretty much we did it all by pioneering new brands. From 1980, when we got married, all the way through till, you know, that till Fiat was reintroduced or Smart Car or the rest of them, we took every new brand that came to the United States, almost every new brand, and we pioneered it. We pioneered the first Korean car, the Hyundai. We pioneered the Acura franchises, the first Acura dealer. We got Mitsubishi, we even tried Daewoo, Smart Car.
Wow. Okay, so what were the, okay, so we know you're the first Honda. Go over the ones you're the first in, which is crazy to imagine that you're the first with Honda.
First with Honda. We were the first with Isuzu. Back in 1980, we were the first with Acura, the first dealer with Acura. We were the first dealer with Hyundai. When Hyundai was introduced in 1985, we were the first ones to open two dealerships, one in Atlanta and one in Fort Lauderdale. Opening day. That was the national opening day, which was February 18th, 1986. And we introduced, you know, Mitsubishi, Daewoo. We brought Smart Car when Penske was the distributor. We brought Smart Car to our portfolio and introduced it on the first day. So that's, you know, we didn't have the funds to buy Chevy stores or Ford stores, or, you know, we didn't have, you had to buy those from other dealers opposed to getting a new franchise being introduced to the United States. So that kind of how we grew.
So how were you able to get the word out there? Because you're already proven as the first Honda dealership in ever, right? That's kind of a crazy niche for anybody to have. For you guys to get that out there, and for these different car makers from across the world to be all saying, you know, hey, if we're gonna start this thing. You know, there's only one group. There's one person where one company we need to think about. It's Case, right? We got to meet with the Case people, right? That reputation would have had to be amazing for them to. Did you guys go to them and say we can do this? We've done it before. Did they come to you sometimes? Can you tell us about that?
No, we would always make a pitch because we always wanted the best markets. So we went to Hyundai. In 1985 and said, we want to be your dealer in Fort Lauderdale because we felt that would be more of a melting pot to be open-minded to the first Korean product sold in the United States. If you think back, Korean products opposed to Japanese, the Japanese products like the cameras, there were things that the Japanese culture made that we were used to and we felt was quality. But Korea, if you think back in 1985, there wasn't any products that Koreans sold to the public that you thought, oh, that's made in Korea. That's going to be a good product.
Yeah.
So we, you know, most people, when they thought of Korea, again, remember, this is 85. I thought of the Korean War because it wasn't really that long after. It was only like 25 years.
So, right.
So we went to them and we said, we can introduce your product into the United States. And we will be your volume dealer. We will be your number one volume dealer in the country. And we did the same thing with Acura. We said, and we were the number one volume Acura dealer for 10 years in a row, the world's largest dealer. We've been the world's, today we're still the largest. We're in the top five, top three, actually, Hyundai stores and Genesis. And so we, the same thing with the, with, you know, like Kia, for example. We just, we had a great formula for selling a product that had never been introduced in the United States before. If you can go back 40 years, go back 35 years, that was a big purchase. Your house and then your car were your two biggest purchases.
Sure.
Some demographic changes later, a lot of people are renting and that kind of thing, but still the car is a super big purchase.
Yes.
We had to convince people, why should they buy a Korean car when there's no proof that Koreans can make anything quality?
Yeah, so how did you do it? Because I definitely felt that way back then, right? I was at 85. I saw these cars come on the market. I didn't probably notice them until maybe 5 years later, something like that. I think there was a dealership that came in the Chicagoland area, maybe in the early 90s or something like that. But either way, you know, I saw this dealership pop up. And all of a sudden, they had these beautiful cars, and they're loading up the lot with them, right? And I had the mentality of, you know, the negativity of a Korean car is being, ah, Korea, come on. They don't make cars. Can they be that good? How did you get past that thought that people would have about the Korean cars and build it like you did?
Well, what we did was we said, same thing with Acura. Because if you remember, Acura was the first Japanese luxury brand. The very first one. It was before Infiniti, yeah. Before Lexus. And we were competing against the European brands, the BMW, Mercedes-Benz, so Audi. So we, what we did was we said, okay, how do we prove to people that they should at least consider an Acura or consider a Hyundai? Both of these brands were opened within 30 days of each other in the same year in the United States. Just a coincidence, but that's how it rolled out. So what we did was we bought the identical model, type model, as the Acura. So we bought a Cadillac, we bought a BMW, we bought a Mercedes-Benz. You get that picture?
And yeah.
We did the same thing for the Hyundai. We bought a Chevy, a Ford, a Chrysler, a Honda Civic, a Toyota, yep, Corolla, and brand new the same year. So we bought 1986 brand new cars from other dealers, put them on our lot, and we said, we dare you to compare to the better Hyundai. And so basically, come in, you can drive all the competing models, brand new, late model, latest, you know, current model. Then you decide, after you've driven them, would you like to spend 50% more on a Honda Civic, or would you like to buy a Hyundai for $49.95?
Wow.
It was like a test drive. And so we always said, you know, don't outspend your neighbors, outsmart them. That was another one of our, you know, taglines that we would advertise. So we said,
and so you guys
have to go. We also gave a 5-day money back guarantee.
How did you get the confidence?
I could bring it back.
So Rita, how did you gain the confidence that you could do that? You can get people in all those different models and you can compare and you're going to have great success selling that Hyundai. Did you guys must have done a ton of due diligence to understand, you know, kind of the value proposition you had when it came to price. But more than that, I mean, people look at that, the rideability and all the other things, the comfort of the car. And if you miss that first time, you kind of miss for good. So what type of due diligence did you do to get there?
None at all. Nothing at all. Hey, we knew that the Acura was going to be a great product because Honda makes a great product. And we knew that they were going to be, they are a precision crafted automobile. So we knew that the product was going to drive well, the styling was going to be great, and it was going to be a successful test drive. With the Hyundai, we had spent 2 weeks in Canada before we took the franchise on to make sure we believed that we could stand behind the Hyundai product. So we spent 2 weeks in Canada where Canadians had already had the Pony. It was called the Pony, and which was the Hyundai Excel, which we were selling. It's the same model in Korea. Before we broke ground on our brand new state-of-the-art Hyundai dealership from the ground up, we went to Canada to make sure that the product was great. We interviewed the dealers. We wanted to make sure we didn't have as much confidence in Hyundai as we did Honda because of our experience. So after we got tremendous confidence, we said, okay, this product's going to work. And so basically we just put it in the hands. We had no problem believing that the product was going to do fine with the test drive. And the pricing was so much better. The Civic would be, you know, $10,000, and the Honda was $49.95.
Wow.
We kind of always lived with the philosophy that, you know, yellow lights never turn green. So we've always been like, we are cautious. We are passionate with knowledge, and we believe no one's going to be walking, so they need a car. And we believe that these were great products, and half the living is just believing in it and getting your associates to believe in it. Then you get your customers to believe in it. And it was a great product. Hyundai did have a great product up until about 1992, 93, when they weren't changing the models. They weren't changing their models because in Korea, people would buy the same car over and over, even though it looked the same. In California, in the United States, we want to change. We want to look different. We want our shoes to be different, our purse to be different, our car to be different. Well, in Korea, that wasn't how it was. So they weren't used to our culture. And also there was some other mechanical things that weren't working out great. Nothing that we couldn't overcome. So that's when we wrote the 10-year, 100,000-mile warranty. We authored that, Rick Case. So when Hyundai was going down from selling 300,000 cars a year down to 85,000 cars a year by 1996, their 10-year anniversary, we told, we went to the main office of the Hyundai national leadership, and we said, hey, you're not going in the right direction from selling 300,000 cars in 1989 to selling 85,000 cars in 1996. This is not the right direction. Yeah. And so we gave them an idea of the 10-year, 100,000-mile warranty in order for them to rebuild confidence in the nation that they should, people should consider a Hyundai again. So that's how that 100,000-mile warranty, we were the authors of that.
Wow. And I mean, what do you have to do there? I mean, when you think about that, Rita, you know, no matter what, 10, I mean, it could be an amazing car, but that there's a cost attributed to that extended warranty. So was it one that was sold or automatic? It was a 10-year automatic 10-year warranty.
Yeah, well, what we did was when we went to Hyundai, they said they wouldn't do it because they didn't know the cost. We were trying to sell them to do it because we felt this was the only way to build confidence back, to get people to come to the dealership to try the car, because we were literally, Hyundai was going out of business in the United States. People were giving back to franchises super fast. So we, so they wouldn't do it because they couldn't figure out the cost. So Rick Case, ourselves, and the other four South Florida dealers in Miami-Dade and Broward County, we bought an insurance policy together, and we all started advertising a 10-year, 100,000-mile warranty, all five dealerships in South Florida, and we raised the volume quickly, and in 2 years, that's when Hyundai adopted the 10-year, 100,000-mile warranty. In 1998, when the Sonata came out, is when they really introduced it. And yes, you get the 10-year, 100,000-mile warranty like you would a 2424. It's the warranty that comes with the car.
That's amazing. Okay. So initially, though, you had to buy that policy. You got together with these other dealerships to buy the policy. There had to be a little bit extra cost than on a car that you had to cover, right? You had to
just absorbed it. Because when you think about it, you know, it wasn't transferable. So how many people are going to keep their car for 10 years? The manufacturing warranty was 24-24. So then you got the third year, the fourth year, and it was powertrain warranty. It wasn't bumper to bumper. So the policy wasn't very expensive. I think it was about like somewhere around under $150, somewhere in the $150 range, which we were happy to pay because we were not selling any cars.
Yeah, I love it. You know, so it's funny, I'm talking to you today because in the last few weeks, I believed in my industry for the last probably 30 of my 43 years in business that we need a long-term warranty on pavements. And it's crazy that their one-year warranty is most common, whether it's a concrete pavement or an asphalt pavement. And an asphalt pavement in markets in the country, you know, here in Florida should last 15 or 20 years, let's say, before you have to repave it. In northern markets and markets where soils aren't as good, the life expectancy is like 10 years or 12 years, okay? But concrete pavements, the life expectancy is 20, 30 years on the low end and 50 to 100 years on the high end, okay? So we do both. Our companies do both, concrete or asphalt, doesn't matter, right? And so I was like, we got to offer a long-term warranty. There's no warranty company. There's no companies that do it. we do it automatically for some of our customers that know us, that we can that know what to expect in the aging of a pavement, okay? But recently, in the last 5 years, Rita, we built a technology that flies properties with drones every year and breaks down the condition of the pavements, the roof, the facades, everything around that building. But pavements is where we started because we wanted to help our customers understand how to figure out the long-term costs of doing business, maintaining their parking lots. And so the business is now driven on drones, satellite imagery, and AI like no other business in the world. And it was my son's idea, and it was his and my relationships that, found the right technology people, all the right people to be in this business. But the business is dominating the space. There's nobody in the world doing what we're doing. And actually, we're going to be going to our friends in the dealership network world too, because it's a no-brainer for you to say for a couple thousand dollars a year, your property managers can have a product that allows them to save tens of thousands of dollars when they made in annual maintenance of your property, because it gives you the best engineers in the world. Anyway, so I was with a friend of mine who's a great entrepreneur, young entrepreneur, and I was telling him, he goes, what next, Gary? And you got these businesses that keep growing nationally and all that. What next? I said, you know what? Something that has not been developed is a great long-term warranty for pavements. We're building pavements that will last over 100 years now in concrete pavements. We're building asphalt pavements that should always last 20 or 30 years. So why aren't there 10, 20, and 30-year warranties on pavements? Our customers deserve that. And so he goes, I never thought of it that way. He goes, but I'll start digging into it. Would you consider me as a partner if we were able to build a business together? I said, absolutely. So 3 weeks later, this young entrepreneur friend of mine has unbelievable data that he's using. He's getting it from our data company, our technology company, and then industries when it comes to parking lots and roads and everything else. So we're gonna have this warranty business in play, I think, within a year. And it's gonna be fun because my customers now, for very little, will be able to warranty their pavements for 20 years. And when they do that, they know they've got security and a great contractor, hopefully that did the work as per spec. But then also, if something fails, they know they have a warranty that backs up even that contractor if they're out of business, right? And so again, it's gonna be fun because I'm talking to you. You're talking about taking the risk to build a 10-year warranty like that. It was amazing, right? It took a lot of guts. And I love what you said earlier. I've never heard this term before. I don't know if Chris has, but yellow lights never turn green. I love that saying because I say this all the time. I have great engineers in my businesses and amazing people that I love so much. But so often they're very timid in bringing something to market, saying it's not perfect yet. It's not there yet. But if it's good and it's better than anybody else has, let's get it to market and pilot it with our customers. And then we'll figure it out as we go. It'll be great someday, right? It'll never be perfect though, probably. Anyway,
we took that as soon as for over 20 years, 22 years, we doubled the factory warranty for every model we sell. So for a Hyundai, for a Kia, we do 20-year, 200,000-mile warranty for free if you buy it from our place.
That's crazy.
Yeah, we've done that for over 20 years. So as soon as the Hyundai warranty, the Honda, for example, we doubled the factory warranty to 10 years, 100,000 miles.
Wow, that's amazing.
The models we sell, it's one of our advertising benefits is we double the factory warranty. So
huge differentiator from the industry, right?
Quite easy. Who's going to keep their car for 20 years at 200,000 mile warranty? The risk is low. And we're willing to stand behind the product anyway.
That's awesome.
To get that customer for life.
Well, that's just like pavements, right? If you build them right and pavements last, whatever. I mean, a concrete pavement, if it's done right, can last 100 years plus, okay? So if you build it right, why aren't we giving 20-year warranties on that or 30-year warranties on that, right? Because it's not going to cost you a
risk.
Lot.
If you could.
Small risk.
Right.
Big customer loyalty reward, right?
Exactly. That's why we wrote a book. Our customers are friends.
Wait, slow down.
Yeah, we wrote a book, it's free. You can pick it up at any of our dealerships for free, or you can just email me at ritacase@ritcase.com and I'll mail you one. so you can tell all of your listeners. It's a book about if you treat every customer as you would your best friend, which is free to do. It's called attitude. It's called gratitude. If you just treat every customer as you would your best friend, you are going to have that customer for life. So that is our culture. We believe our culture is far more important to our business success than our strategy or our business strategies.
Culture eats strategy
at our culture
for breakfast. Culture eats strategy for breakfast, right?
Yeah. I mean, culture, we built our company on culture, community culture. Our culture is that our associates are our family, our community are our friends. And that is how, for over 40 years, our customers, our friends has been our culture mantra to our company for over 40 years. So we that's how our whole associates are built on believing that is what will keep our customers loyal and grow our company's foundation. We have very little turnover because our culture is so strong in our company.
Okay, you don't need much more in core values, but do you have like specific core values besides that, or is that it?
Well, our core boils is also education. We believe that, you know, in order for you to have a passion that's successful, it has to be matched with education. So we're all passionate, but passion's not going to get you anywhere if you're not educated on your passion and you have a goal. So we do believe in education. We always believe before you can lead, you have to read. So we'd always kind of say that, you know, you got to create followers. And in order to create followers, you truly have to have empathy and knowledge. Knowledge is confidence. Before you can have confidence, you have to have knowledge. And so a lot of our foundation is about continued education, training. We have a national trainer. We bring in speakers. We do a lot in the community. We sign up for whatever is available for our associates to develop their people skills, not just their automotive skills. I mean, you can read automotive news for that and get pretty much a great education every week. But to be able to change your personality and be able to get people to believe and care that you care.
Yeah.
People don't care really how much you know about them. They really feel good when you care about them. So once you get over that caring and empathy, it's definitely the 70s and the 60s, my way and the highway is past us 30 years ago.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, when you talk about those two things on top of you mentioned first, right? I mean, education is something, passionate education. You're right. So many people like, find your passion. Oh, it's all about your passion. Well, passion matters for sure. But passion doesn't matter if you're not educated and you don't have the knowledge and education to be passionate about, to serve. Passion, in my opinion, is about loving something so much that you want to serve others with that something. But you can't serve others with that something if you're not great at it, if you're not really good at it. How do you serve anybody well, right? So I agree so much. You know, passion's over you sometimes.
That's kind of how I got over the hump back in the 70s. In order for me to be even heard, opposed to being discounted as the dealer's daughter, I had to be the smartest one in the room. So I never said a word in those meetings unless I knew what I had to say was what somebody was going to learn from and was interested in hearing.
So Rita, my career
has been being really, really educated every day.
I'm not going to wait until Chris is done producing this podcast. I'm going to tell Chris to send it to my daughter right away, because I have a daughter that's one of our best leaders, and I didn't expect her to be a CEO, right? But she leads with so much love and compassion for everybody around her, and she outworks people because she wants to do stuff to show people that she can do it herself. But she's like you, she's on a board, right? In our board meetings, she doesn't say a thing until she has something really to say. And when she does, everybody listens because she says it because she knows it, and she's very, very sharp. But more and more as she gets a little older, she's speaking up more. But again, she doesn't say a lot until she knows it well. And then boy, she comes out with some amazing things that we all respect. And anyway, in leadership though, her compassion for others has been an example of leadership that I didn't understand quite as much. I really believed in, you know, from my upbringing in the 70s and 80s, right? That, you know, you got to lead, you got to be strong, you got to make these tough decisions, right? Well, she'll cry if she's got to fire somebody. She's got a business that now is up to about 120 million revenues and growing fast. She's grown it, her and her team have grown it triple in the last 4 or 5 years, right? From what it was. But bottom line is, people my age, right, to people, you know, 10 years older than her, to people 10 years younger than her, love working for her because they know her heart is in the game and she loves them and she cares about them. And again, I've never seen somebody so upset, and I'm upset. When I'm going to let somebody go, it's never a good day for me, right? But she is broken up for a long time when she has to let somebody go, even if it's not the right fit, because she knows that they have a challenge on their hands. And so either way, I believe that the compassion that you have led with, and the energy you've led with, number one, has been incredible, because I can't imagine. I wouldn't work for myself if I could work for you back 20, 30 years ago. But I'm not working. I'm not starting my own business. I want to work for Rita, because your energy is lights up.
You know, it's not really work. Is it really, Gary?
No, it's fun. It's fun.
People all say, well, when your husband died 4 years ago, why are you still working? You could sell your business for so much money. And I'm like, I'm not working. Who's working here? I'm blessed.
You know, I'm sorry. I didn't know your husband died. My wife died three years and 8 months ago now, I think it is.
Oh, so did mine. My husband died in September 2020.
So my wife died the month after that, October 31st in 2020. So within a month of your husband.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, we were over 40 years. We have two beautiful children. Our son is going on 43. Our daughter's going on 41. And yes, he died of cancer, just one of those quick, you know, not lifestyle cancer, but one of those rare ones they didn't have for. So I've been running the company by myself now since he passed away in 2020. And
wow.
But you know, we had a great, I learned a lot from him, and he was a great mentor. And my goal is to continue to be a family owned and operating car dealership group. We're now the largest volume Honda dealer in the country. We're the largest volume Volkswagen dealer in the country. We're a high volume stores. Our stores are big in volume.
How many stores do you have now, Rita?
I have 12, but we're over $2 billion and only be 12 dealerships. So our dealerships are, my husband and I wanted, you know, like I told you back when we first met, he was about volume and I was about, you know, business. So,
yeah. People, you're about the people. So my wife was amazing. We were married for 35 years and we have 4 kids, and our oldest, Austin, is the CEO of all of our companies today. He's 30, going to be 37 in a couple weeks. And Janelle is second. She's 34, going to be 35 in a couple weeks. And they're the two that run the businesses and the family. And then we have leaders of every business that they're CEOs in the businesses. But like Rick, my wife, Cheryl, was an inspiration, not just to me, but our whole organization, because she jumped in and out of businesses as we needed her, from the time we're a couple million-dollar business, right? And then after that, she led our foundation, and our foundation has grown to be a serious foundation that really invests in some great community causes. And the foundation now is run by my daughter, Janelle, and she puts their heart into it just like Cheryl did, and it continues to grow very nicely. And so, you know, either way, you know, life is, you know, it's quite a journey, and God has a plan for all of us.
I just have to keep being positive. People are like, how can you keep going? You and Rick were like one person. Nobody ever saw us apart. We ran the business together. We did all our philanthropic together. Every award we ever got was Rita and Rick. It wasn't Rick Case.
That's awesome.
Rick Case, you know, Ernst & Young or read it. And so when he passed away so quickly, they're like, oh, and I said, Shay, you just got to keep going. You
have Yes.
It's all about attitude. It's just
not just that, attitude. but you have everything about him is in your, you and your kids are going to continue to exude. Right. And so the lessons that God gave you through him are incredible. And you and your kids, your team. We on our leadership
network too. We've been in the car business our entire lives, and it's a great circle. You know, your network is your net worth. I always tell people, make sure that you have a great network. So when Rick passed away, I didn't feel alone at all. The whole network, the automotive network came together. My philanthropic and community network came together, and I'm just keeping it going because it's fun.
What are your kids doing?
Your business. I love mine.
Yep. What are your kids doing nowadays, Rita?
I know that both of them are in the business. You know, they're both doing different things. Neither one of them are to the position that your children are. And that's probably because Rick and I were such a power couple. We really didn't make much room for them to be like moving up very quickly. But they're now more involved than they were before. We do have general managers in every one of our stores. We don't have any owners. I'm the sole owner. Mm-hmm. And, So
if you ever want to network, so my son Austin is now a leader in YPO also. Are you YPO?
Oh, I'm not. You know, I never had time for YPO, and both my kids now, got too old. But I have lots of YPO friends, and I've done a lot of speaking for them. They come to our dealerships, and I speak. YPO is great.
It is great. And my son Austin's in. Janelle doesn't choose to be in yet, but Austin is learning a lot from YPO, as I did as a younger leader too. Austin, you know, loves networking with other young leaders. So, you know, he's an amazing young man. He was the founder of the technology company that's our probably most valuable company nowadays. And anyway, but if you ever want to get your kids together with mine, I guarantee you they'll see what, you know, in friends they want to see. They'll see the quality of character in these kids. No thanks to me. Thanks to my wife that just kind of filled them with character, right? But either way, love to introduce our kids too. But really, it's all about that, right? It's all about, you know, you said it so well. I mean, your slogan, when you think about this, you know, your associates are your family, not your employees, but your associates are your family, right? And I believe the same thing. And you know, and then we look at, you know, our customers are our friends. If you don't thank these people that do business with you every day, you don't thank these people and you don't have gratitude for these people that are working every day with your name, right, on their shirt or on their paycheck, right? If you can't have gratitude for that, you know, you're really missing out, right? And I think most people of success do. Some people don't, but again, you've got it all, and it's so fun to see the energy in you. You know, there's people in this world that light up, not just every light up with energy, every person they run into, but every room they walk into and the communities they're part of. Those people are the most valuable in the world. And you got that. I want to meet you personally someday because you got all that. It's so fun to see you passionate about this massive business. That's just still kind of a little family business to you, right?
Well, you know, integrity is everything. I always tell all of our associates that, and my kids and my community, you know, if you have integrity, nothing else matters.
That's right.
If you don't have integrity, nothing else matters.
Absolutely. Chris, I'd like to bring Chris in at the end and Rita and just kind of pick up, you know, kind of talk about what he picked up on this podcast, the nuggets of you know, cool things and success he's seen and heard. And then also just maybe if he's got a question or something too. So Chris, you want to go after this and finish up for us.
Yeah. Rita, your passion for the business and continue to run the business is super inspiring. And we can just feel it through your words and actions and energy. So thank you for sharing that with us. It was very, very inspiring. You know, we've interviewed over 100 incredibly high performing entrepreneurs and business owners. And I have never heard yellow lights never turn green. That's one of the most like awesome sayings. And
Good.
But I love it. And I wanted, I have so many questions about it. Like where did you come up with it? Where did you find it? And what does it mean to you?
Well, I found it from a speaker at Horatio Alger. I'm Horatio Alger honoree. And so whenever I'm in any, I'm in a lot of opportunities to hear speakers, both in the auto industry, in the seminars, but also in some of the, like, Time Dealer of the Year. I'm going to 100 Most Influential People in New York in a few weeks. And you get in front of these people that are entrepreneurs, that are successful, that are brilliant. Jamie Dimon, I got something from him the other day. So I'm listening. And whenever, I've always got a pen. I always have a pen. I always have a piece of paper. And oh, it always aggravates me when I'll be in a room with a great speaker and everybody's just sitting there and nobody has a pen out. I'm like, you know, you'll always see me with a pen. And I wrote that down some time ago when someone had said it, talking about their career. And I thought, I love that saying, because that's about not being too cautious. You know, have confidence and go for it. Because how much wrong can really go? How much can you really go wrong if you feel good about, you know, I'm saying, you know, you've got some foundation. So I always like that, you know, a yellow light never turns green, because some people have always got the brakes on, And you all, you know, I still don't think you can really make it. I always say, you know, the biggest room in the world is room for improvement. And a goal is a dream. A goal is a dream with a deadline. Everyone's, I got a dream, the American dream. I am the American dream. I am truly the definition of American dream, going from selling a Honda car that nobody else could sell to being the owner and operator of the largest private, you know, the largest automotive group owned by a woman in the United States. I did by having a dream, but then having a goal and educating myself on that goal, writing that goal down, having a plan. I always tell people, persistence removes resistance, which is one of the chapters in my book. And the other thing in my book, one of the chapters is, never take no for an answer. And another one is, start early, plan your day, and work your plan. If you do those three things, if you never take no for an answer, because you're persistent and you'll eventually remove resistance, and you start early, plan your day, and work your plan, trust me, your dreams will come true.
Absolutely. Wow. I mean, I love to meet you someday, because I mean, some of the stuff, the biggest room in the world is the room for improvement. You know, another one I've never heard.
An hour away. You said you were in Naples?
Oh, in Naples, yeah.
So, like, you're an hour away. You could be buying your cars from me. Who are you buying your cars from, by the way?
You know, a bunch of different people. We have a lot of cars, a lot of trucks, a lot of pickup trucks. So we need to start buying
that solution for you.
But we're growing in Florida now. We're actually starting in Florida in the near future. We got one company that just moved here. We're going to be doing a lot of work in Florida. So we will be buying cars from you now. Because there's nobody that wants to buy cars for work.
There's hardly anybody I don't know in Florida. I know every contractor. I know even the road people. I know Ronnie Bergeron. I haven't dinner with him in two nights.
All right.
Development. I know.
So and we're different, because we you know, big road builders like us, because we don't compete with them. We only do commercial industrial paving, and we do it all over the country. So we're a great partner for many of the, like, the road builders, things like that. We buy a lot of material, right? So we're going to meet up. I want to come over there and see you sometime. And then I'd like to follow up with a sell call to you, because I want to tell you about that. I want to bounce that warranty thing off of you eventually. And I want to tell you about that technology that can make your life easier on your facilities, on those 12 facilities. You know,
you should bring your daughter on over here, because we're only an hour away and we have the largest dealerships in the world. Our dealerships are 8 stories high. They're 600,000 square feet. You will never have seen a dealership as big as ours. So come on.
Be careful what you ask for, because I'm coming, girl.
Okay. I'm only an hour away.
So Chris, what else you got on this amazing story and this amazing person, Rita?
Yeah. Rita, for all of our female entrepreneur listeners, do you have any advice for thriving and you know, you literally became the largest female dealership owner in the country, at least not the world. Do you have any advice for female entrepreneurs surviving, thriving in male-dominated industries?
Well, you know, people ask me that often because we're truly still a male-dominated industry. I was just in a meeting a couple of weeks ago in North Carolina for the Mazda dealers, and I was the only woman in the room. I was the only female car dealer in the room. The only other woman in the room was one of the people that was organizing the room. And I look around and I'm like, man, we still cannot break in. And it's really fundamentally, you have to really want to be as far as the car business I'm talking, you have to want to negotiate. Our whole business is about negotiating. Not that yours isn't also, but you know what I'm saying. As a contractor, yeah, you're always against another bid, another competition, and you're negotiating. Yep. But in the car business, it's every single customer is a negotiation, whether it's service, whether it's sales. So women traditionally do not prefer the skill of negotiating or the art of the negotiating. They would really prefer to, you know, pick out the refrigerator with their husband at Sears and then say to him, I'm going to go over to the shoe department. You figure out what we're going to pay for this refrigerator, but I don't want to really be even near where you're negotiating. So it's negotiating. You know, we're commission-based. That's another thing. You know, you don't know your hours. Our businesses, it's really hard to know your hours, even though we have a very reasonable schedule, you know, 9 to 2, 2 to 9. Your customer walks in at 9:05 that you've been waiting for since 6:00, and you've got to stay. You can't sell them. Sorry, did you come back tomorrow to buy those cars or that car? So we just generally have not been able to attract women for the basic underlying skill foundation that's required to be a successful car dealer. And so my advice would be that to be passionate about people, be confident and passionate about the fun of negotiating, because when someone does buy, it's a win-win. You're winning, they're winning. So see it as a game. I always tell all my associates, I said, look at the negotiating as a game. You're playing a chess game. Make it fun. Don't make it like pulling teeth. Make it fun. I always think the funner the customer has, the faster they buy and the more they pay. So make it fun and the customer will get into the game. And there's really, you know, a lot of things have changed in the last 35 years. So women not being accepted or whatever in the showroom, that's all, forget that. That's past. Women are very much appreciated in the dealership environment. We even have, you know, bathrooms for the women technicians, though we haven't been able to attract any. I think we might have one or two, but it's just not a field that women have picked.
Yeah. And I think it's kind of the DNA.
My advice to women breaking into a male-dominated industry would be professional, dress professionally, dress like you're coming to the meeting. For the meeting, not to be seen. It's very important that a woman dresses very conservatively in a male-dominated leadership role. And
makes sense.
Speak when you really have something to say that you think everyone's going to hear, even though the guys may be speaking on top of each other and whatever. Just wait. Wait for your time. That's right.
That should be men and women. Unfortunately, you know, men like me don't think that way, like as much as we should, but this should be for everybody, right? Speak when you have something to say. All right. And I would say that this, I mean, I see, you know, when you explain to what, you know, you and Rick and the differences and how you guys were successful, you know, understand your strengths and weaknesses. If you're not a negotiator, you know, you find that person that's a negotiator to be part of your leadership team or a partner, right? If you're not a salesperson, find that person that is. And, you know, that's something my daughter's finding out, right? She's got some great skills, but she's not, she can sell because she's, you know, people could see her as a really good person. She knows the product, but she doesn't like selling that much, right? She loves operation. She loves technology. But again, so you got to find your strength, and she's finding people that exude her weaknesses And she's having success with it, right? But I think what you did with Rick is you guys both knew your strengths and you stayed in those in your wheelhouses. I think that's a result of success that I think all women could learn, all men and women, right? But women that want to lead, you know, hey, you know what you're good at, and women are good at so many more things than men that it's a no brainer that more women should lead, right? So,
cool. Well, it's going to be easier if they're willing to get into leadership in the auto industry with the public companies too.
You've got
a lot more public companies with AutoNation and Penske and Lithia and Group One and Asbury. These public companies have a different, an easier career path for a woman to get into with all the training that they have and all the support that they have. And it's publicly owned and operated, where the father, daughter, father, son, that dynamics that had been traditionally the way a woman would get in the car business just wasn't as easy.
Sure. Do you know a couple other, I think they're still privately held. Do you know Greg Kuhn's, the Kuhn's group of dealerships in the Midwest? He's got a bunch of cars. They're really nice people. Another one, Ed Napleton. Napleton.
Of course.
So Napleton.
Of course I know Ed Napleton. He's right here in my backyard.
Yeah. So they're all over Northern Illinois and where I'm from. And then David Hudson, another one that I met, really nice guy that I met recently. He's got dealerships. I think he's where is he at? More East Coast, I think, is his stuff. But anyway, it's a really cool business that you're in. And I'm a car guy. I love cars. So, you know, when my friends are in the car business, I'm like, man, that's a cool business. You know, I like pavements. My business is fun, but yours is just a tad cooler, I think, overall.
We need both of our businesses. So that Gary, we're very fortunate. Nobody's going to be walking anytime soon, no matter whether it drives itself or it's electric or what.
Yep.
People say, what do you do, Rita? And I said, I sell freedom. They go, what's that? And I said, I sell automobiles. And that's the American mobility. That's our American freedom.
True,
other countries
true.
Have other challenges with freedom, but our freedom is our mobility.
And I agree.
People are going to be buying cars, and people are going to need roads to drive them on. So we both have
to long as there's cars, there's going to be pavement. So, yep, we're kind of,
right.
we're in sister industries. Awesome. Well, hey, you know what? I got a lot out of this. I know our listeners are going to get a ton out of this. The biggest thing I got out of this is, you know, again, we interview some really amazing people, but energy, you know, is something that I believe it really matters, right? And when you exude energy, I believe you bring energy to every person you're with or around, right? Every room you're in and every community that you're willing to be part of and serve, right? So I can't imagine the blessings that you bring every day to the people around you. And it's really, really my pleasure to get to know you over this podcast. And I'm going to be calling on you, girl, because I want to talk to you about a couple of things. And when we come over there, we're looking for you. I'll bring my daughter, my son over there. We'll check out your operation sometime.
Again, we'll be sure you all drive in one car so that you can all go home in three.
Oh, that's great. All right. Well, Rita, thanks for everything. I really appreciate all your time.
I really appreciate the, this was fun.
It was a blast. Thank you so much for being here.
Okay, be sure that all your, these books are free. I'll be happy to send one to anyone that wants one.
I want some of those books for sure. So
it's entrepreneurship. It's about entrepreneurship. It's about how to overcome, how to follow your dream, how to set your plan, how to build your business, doesn't have to be a business, build your career, build your passion. And it's a really fun book because it's all about what we did and how we overcame all of the obstacles that we had in business. And everybody wants to read about cars, so it's a good book.
Okay, hey, give us that title one more time.
Yeah, it's called Our Customers Are Friends, and it's free. The book is free. If you do go on Amazon to buy it, then the money goes to the Boys and Girls Clubs. But like I said, I'll send it to anybody that wants it for free. All they have to do is email me their address. And I think I have your address on your email. I'll be sure to get you up some of these for your staff and for your kids.
You're awesome. Rita, thank you so much. God bless you. And well, thanks for being on Dish Digger CEO today. Thanks so much.
All right. See ya. I'll be in touch. Bye.
Thanks.
If you enjoy this show, please share with anyone else you think will find value here. And please go to our website, ditchdiggerceo.com, for show notes, links, video clips, and more nuggets of entrepreneurial wisdom. Don't forget to follow me on social media at ditchdiggerceo.
Paper routes, mowing lawns, careless hands. Daddy had six kids to raise. Factory and not a neighbor heard my name. Learn by example, not the words you said. Watched his every move and followed his footsteps. Pick and shovel in these two hands.
To the
soup wearing CEO. Watch them as they left you.